Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express.
Jaguars Thursday.
Voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
All right, welcome into the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Jaguars Thursday, Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman. Baselli is on a cruise ship somewhere for spring break.
Spring break time.
Yeah, can you just see him? He's doing jello shots.
I'll bet you any amount of money that it was one of those package deals to where he gets unlimited food at the buffet as part of the package, knowing him.
That's not a bet that anybody's going
to
argue
with. I'd love to put him on a scale when he returns.
We can do that. We can go right down the hallway.
Yeah.
Done. Next week, you can do it.
Need to do that.
Just for fun. Busy week around the National Football League. Busy week around the National Football League, including pro days. And some key players are stepping out in front of NFL scouts and head coaches and general managers. And Jaguars.com is all over it like no other team website. Right, J.P. Shadrick?
That's right. Josh.
You were the only guys in Louisville?
Thanks for the plug. Yeah, we were. Well, there were some other media folks there.
But the only team website that was there.
Yes. And we were in at UCF in Orlando yesterday.
Were you guys live in Louisville?
We were live.
So live in Louisville. Mm-hmm. I know you were live at UCF.
That's correct.
Where are you going next?
Yeah, what's next?
We're planning on going live at A&M for Manziel's personal day. He'll work out with Mike Evans and a few other receivers. The setup there might be a little different. May not be able to see the field. We're trying to work through some logistics. That will be live in Columbia, South Carolina, too, the week after for Clowney and the others there. So that's the plan. You know, it's something new. I haven't tried it before. And
it's
worked
cool out
all right.
And, you know, if you want to watch some of this stuff, I mean, you can go to the NFL Network. But, you know, you can go to Jaguars.com.
Yeah.
In fact, you guys had, correct me if I'm wrong, Blake Bortles, part of his workout that nobody else carried live, but you guys had it on Jaguars.com.
We were the only place on the internet you could see it live.
That backpack has really just changed Jaguars.com, hasn't it?
It's a Live U is what it's called, L-I-V-E-U. Used to have a big one. They got a smaller one now. There's graphics you can put in from here with somebody back here doing it live, and it goes live right to the website.
Nice.
It's pretty awesome.
You need a live truck.
Oh, it's been fantastic. So, trying a few different things, and it was cool going to Louisville and seeing their setup there and Teddy Bridgewater's workout. There was no rules, just go right up to they ran the 40, and I could feel the wind right in front of me. You know,
all right, well, let's go back chronologically. Go back, because the first one you went to was Bridgewater's.
That's right.
And it was almost unanimous that Bridgewater's workout was less than stellar. There wasn't the wow factor that a lot of people thought there would be for this guy.
If you ask the folks who know quarterbacking well that were there, Jaworski was there, Donovan McNabb was there, a few of those guys, it was not a bad day because he did make some nice throws.
Now, wait a minute. Now, JP, you've watched football for a long period of time. You know, those we kind of know that a lot of those people had a somewhat negative opinion of Teddy Bridgewater's workout. You know football. I mean, for God's sakes, you went to Alabama.
Okay.
Right, so I mean that makes you an automatic
Thanks.
About being an expert on football,
okay. Except for everyone at Auburn who disagrees.
Exactly, your opinion,
okay,
on Teddy Bridgewater's workout.
The ball was on the ground a lot,
okay,
and in a scripted environment like that, where he knows where he's supposed to throw, I don't expect to see a ball on the ground, and that's what a lot of folks I think feel the same way. The ball's fluttering; it's on the ground some. Deep balls weren't there. Little struggle early. Got a little groove as he started to throw a little bit, but then as he went a little longer, you could tell he was getting tired a little bit. He said after that he was sick. He had a flu coming back into the cold weather.
I've seen that from a lot of guys, by the way.
You know,
a lot of guys are talking about, you know, coming back for their workouts and lost a little weight, have a little bug going on. Here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
What'd he look like? I mean, we've seen him on TV. In person, it's so much different. I mean, give us a...
He's a very slight build guy.
I mean,
we
talk about
watch him on TV.
But long arms and huge hands. I mean, give us an idea of what he looks
like.
Yeah,
his hand, you know, the hand size for him was the big topic in Indianapolis. Maybe not as big as they might have thought.
And we've seen that before. I mean, Byron Leftwich had very small hands and very small feet.
It doesn't matter what you do as long as you get the ball there, I guess, is the size of the hand. So he's very slight, like you were saying. Very skinny. His ankles are about that big around. I mean, just tiny. Just really slight. More, it looks like a basketball player build more than it does a quarterback build to me. You know, really slender. Even more slender now. 7 pounds lighter than he was in Indianapolis.
Well, supposedly he gained some weight for Indianapolis, yeah, and then he's since lost some weight.
You know, he said he said it again the other day in his press conference after that his sophomore year at Louisville, he was 222 pounds. His goal is to get back to about 222, 225. Yeah, he he's at 214 at the combine, down to 207 now. I mean, he's fluctuating so much. It's tough to get all that.
He did have a medical issue.
It was a jaw. It was a they had to break his jaw to fix some kind of jaw thing. So he didn't eat for a while. That's what got him. That's what he claims, at least, that got him down originally. So the weight's an issue. He didn't throw with a glove the other day for the first time. He threw with a glove all college. But he had been working out without a glove with Chris Winkie down here in Florida and decided to go without the glove. Well, now he's going to try it again with the glove. There's all this stuff going on with him. It's always something, it's the glove. It seems like.
Does it bother you that he has tiny ankles?
Me?
I mean, if you're looking at a quarterback, no?
No, it doesn't bother me. I mean, it takes all physical kinds to do different things. I mean, there's no set, you know, prescription. Okay, this you have to have these physical traits to do this. I mean, because we know that's not the case. I mean, look at the history of the National Football League. I mean, there's been so many different body types that have played. Now, if I'm looking at an offensive lineman and I see, you know, skinny ankles, the ability to gain weight probably is not very strong.
And I didn't mean to say anything by that being a problem.
Well,
I
but just it's,
meant,
a, you, it's a physical
you
characteristic.
You told me to describe the guy.
Right.
And that's
it's a physical
what I saw
characteristic.
Was skinny arms and skinny legs.
For me, I still go back. I mean, that's just a piece of the puzzle. And you still go back, and the bulk of it's got to be the evaluation of what he has been able to do over the last 2 years at Louisville. Yeah. And he's been accurate. He's been effective. He's been a winner. And when you turn on the tape, the guy makes great decisions under pressure, fairly careful with the ball. A lot of times he tries to be Brett Favre and squeeze it into a small window. But when you watch the film, I don't think there's still any doubt, you know, you, pro day, whatever. You still know that he is probably the most ready to step in and play right now in the National Football League.
Well, I'll say this about the pro days. You can't take that much stock. It's one day's work.
It's just a piece of the puzzle, right?
I don't know if it dropped him down any boards at all, but it'll cause some personnel folks to go back and look at that tape just to double check, you know, whereas Bortles had a great day. They may not have to go back and check as much with him. You know, they'll just double check a little more with Bridgewater to make sure that tape is something they saw in the pro day, didn't really come out in tape they didn't see before.
The one thing that's always impressed me about Bridgewater is that when he's under pressure, he immediately knows where to take his eyes to for his check guy. Once he looks and he sees something and pressure's imminent but not right in his face, he knows where he needs to go with the ball next. And I think that's a little different than what Blake Bortles has kind of done at UCF, and that Blake, I don't think, really had to process a lot of coverages in his decision-making from the pocket. Bortles kind of comes from a system a little bit more similar to what Blaine Gabbert, and I'm not trying to draw comparisons to the two of them, I'm just saying a similar system, and that Blaine had where a lot of stuff was timing, take your drop or get the ball in shotgun and then balls out immediately to where there's not a lot of decisive decisions that have to be made. A little different with those two guys. Yeah.
All right. So Bridgewater still number one in your mind.
I mean, off the film, and you know, it's not like I watched two years of film
but
on
you know,
each guy.
You just told JP, you know football, you know what you're looking at in a quarterback.
I like the decision-making of Teddy Bridgewater. With Blake Bortles, there's no doubt the arm strength is there. He's got all the measurables. You know, when JP, first thing, probably you came back and said, man, his ankles are way bigger than Teddy's.
Hold that thought. Let's take a break. We'll come back after this and talk about the UCF Pro Day yesterday that Jaguars.com carried live. JP Shadrick sitting in for Tony Buscelli, Sexton Lagerman, you here on a Thursday night from the HannityAutos.com studio on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HannaniaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
All right, this portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Fanatics.com. Did I just say that? You've crossed that out months ago, right? Jaguars Thursday. Not your fault. Brought to you by Fanatics.com, live from the HannaniaAutos.com studio. Sexton Lagerman, JP Shadrick from Jaguars.com, who was in Louisville. We just really went in-depth in the last segment on Teddy Bridgewater.
I mean, we're talking about ankle size. We're deep.
Deep.
We're deep.
I mean, this is a strong evaluation.
We dig deep on Jaguars.
Did you look into his eyes?
I didn't actually at all. I will tell you, though, that St. Patrick's Day in Louisville, a little tame. Not a lot going on in Louisville.
You would know.
St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, we tried.
You would be a very good judge of that.
All right, so let's move on. Blake Bortles was yesterday. And anyone that you talked to that was familiar with him would tell you arm strength, prototypical size, yep. good athleticism, top intangibles, great leader. But the question mark was his footwork. You know, and oftentimes they said it would look like he was playing with a bucket on his foot. So that was not what we saw yesterday from Bortles at UCF, was it?
No. And you know who's working with him? Jordan Palmer, former Jaguar quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now the Bears, I believe. So Palmer actually led the workout for him. So he was on the field, would holler out what exactly was next. There was a rundown that was printed out, an outline of what throws he was going to make. And Palmer would explain the play and what was going to happen, then they'd run that play. And it was fine. But to your footwork point, yes. I guess last year, and he said this after the media, he was having trouble with deep balls, throwing a little shorter than normal, just leaving them short. So he kind of widened the base a little bit, and he made a point yesterday to overthrow the deep ball because he could, you know, and that's what he said. At least he could get it down there. I didn't see a lot of deep balls completed, a couple. And you can go back on Jaguars.com now and watch every throw he made yesterday. It's all in about a six-minute video if you want to watch it. But there were some deep balls that weren't completed, but they weren't underthrown. Let's put it that way. So that was one thing he really wanted to correct. He made a point of that. Everything else, as crisp as he can find it.
Did you measure his ankle size?
Oh, they were huge.
Huge? Big, huge ankles, big yeah, ankles?
Big ankles.
Big man?
Yeah. So, yeah, no, like he's 6'5", 235.
Big man.
Big guy. Zip on the ball. Real time. I mean, everything was what you wanted it to be. I think it was a solid day. There was nobody there, I think, that would drop him at all. I mean, it was obvious, it kind of solidified everybody's
solidified him or might have elevated him in a lot of people's minds.
All right, but where is he? I mean, if he's not the most NFL-ready quarterback, and he's probably not because you evaluated Bridgewater to be that guy.
I mean, you look at the – if you just
is he
look,
a top 10 pick?
If you look at the – no, I think he is just because of the importance of the position, but if you didn't – have the importance of the position, maybe not. I mean, at this time last year, and I threw this question out to you guys during a commercial break. At this point last year, when everybody's starting to talk about the quarterback prospects that were leading up to the 2013 draft, how many people were saying, boy, wait till next year in 2014 when Blake Bortles gets to the point where he's going to be draftable? I don't know if anybody was talking about
me. No, I was not.
Let's put it a different way. No, and I wasn't either. If Marcus Mariota from Oregon and Brett Hundley from UCLA, who were two guys that most thought would come out but opted mm-hmm. to stay, were in this draft, would Bortles be in the conversation like he is?
He would be in the conversation, but probably not as high. I mean, if you look at Bortles' numbers...
Because they were talking about those guys last year. They're not talking about Bortles.
Well, if you look at Bortles' numbers, I mean, his numbers, his accuracy is not all there. You know, but, I mean, he's got a strong arm. He's got the measurables. Now, go back to what I'm saying is that the importance of the position sometimes has a tendency to make people manufacture prospects at a higher level than what they ought to be.
Does Houston take him at one? Can you take him at one?
I don't think you can take him at one. I mean, there's too many other positions that are just, you know, locks at having high-end talent. Jadeveon Clowney.
Throw him in there with J.J. Watt. That's pretty strong.
Khalil Mack, Sammy Watkins. I mean, these guys are prospects that there's absolutely no debate.
Let's back up real quick. How good are the Houston Texans when you look at all the players that have left?
How good are they
personnel-wise? Well, they've lost seven guys from their roster.
Well, they've lost seven guys, but they still have a tremendous amount of talent.
Well, you know where I'm going with this. I mean, are they a player? Are they a quarterback away from being able to step back up and compete with the Colts for the division title?
I mean, which quarterback?
I don't
know. I mean,
if they
yeah.
were,
yeah.
then no, maybe you take
it. If Matt Schaub, if they decide, let's go with Matt Schaub, we'll put Jadeveon Clowney in. We'll see if we can get Schaub, and Bill O'Brien's supposed to be an excellent quarterback teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Put him back, because we know what he was for a couple of years there. Put him back in there. You got a young first-round pick receiver from a year ago. You still got Andre Johnson. Are they good enough, if they can resurrect Schaub, that if they put Clowney in at that spot or Khalil Mack?
Well, I don't think any one draft pick is going to make that big of a difference on whether a team is
but that's not a
2-14
team
or not. No, absolutely not.
It wasn't supposed to be.
No way.
It was 8 or 9 games by one score.
Well, absolutely.
Less, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at them at number one, You know, I mean, what are they doing?
Well, and then you also look at get you know a really good coach in there, which everybody seems to think that O'Brien's a great coach.
He was highly sought after for a number of years.
Look, I don't know if he's a good coach or not. I have never been personally around the guy. But I know that if you go to Penn State after the huge incident with Sandusky and you're able to win like he did, you're a good coach. That's my opinion on him.
I think a lot
because
of people share
what he was able to do at Penn State is unbelievable. And to keep the pride of the people that went to Penn State, to keep the number of players that he did from leaving, I think it says a lot about him.
When you look at the Texans, if you see the guy in Bortles that you think a year from now, if he'd stayed another year, would have been the top guy coming out, if you do, do you take him this year? I mean, and that's why a lot of people are putting them there, because they think that Bortles is a guy who would have qualified to be at the very top of the draft with another year.
I hope they take him.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a win. If they take him or Johnny Manziel, what a win for this franchise to push some guys down the board to them.
Well, it depends on what happens at two. Do the Rams make a deal with somebody at two?
What
for somebody
that's in love with Connie? But you know what? Even if they made a deal at number two, you're going to get one of two prospects that are either off the charts talent-wise or off the charts as far as projecting into the National Football League. And when I say off the charts talent-wise, Clowney, off the charts projection-wise, that's Khalil Mack.
I still say you trade at three, even at that point. Get more picks. Why not? Dave said before he wants between 12 and 14 picks. They have 11 right now.
He's got 11.
There's got to be a deal coming somewhere.
Yeah,
if
but
they
you know
get
what? I mean, we know that. I mean, to really get value for a high pick like what they have at three, it has to be quarterback. That's what gives you the picks. I mean, how many other positions legitimately give you that kind of compensation for a number three overall pick? The only one, if Clowney were to somehow fall to the Jaguars at three, that may be a possibility that you could make that pick tradable.
I think if you look at what Atlanta did a few years ago with Julio Jones and what that did blowing up that offense, Sammy Watkins is getting favorable reviews to be that kind of player.
Yeah, what did it do to Atlanta this past year?
Well, it didn't help them this year.
No, it didn't
help. But they did have a lot of problems on both lines this year, and Julio Jones got hurt.
Well, one of the reasons let me just make this point. One of the reasons why you had problems on your lines,
you didn't build it,
is because you gave up so many draft picks for that one wide receiver to get them.
Point made.
Quarterback killed. Yeah.
But there are some teams that think that he could be the difference. Detroit. That could really open things up.
And that's
up.
The mindset. I mean, you hope.
And they spent time on their line the last couple of years. Detroit has.
You hope that there's somebody. Like, look, I know that David Caldwell has said that he would do that trade over again for the wide receiver, Julio Jones, that they got
Cleveland,
in Atlanta.
They gave Cleveland.
I totally disagree.
Six picks.
I totally disagree with that. I mean, I don't think it was. Even to this day, I still don't think it was worth it. I don't. I mean, how many picks did they give up?
Six.
Six picks.
Six picks.
How many in the top three rounds? How many was that?
Four, I believe.
Four
in
the top three rounds.
A two and a three involved in that.
I'm not, you know, debating the talent of Julio Jones, but look what you could have had. And if anybody went back and said, okay, let's go back and see who we could have selected if we, you know, with those picks that if we had just kept them. And if somebody went back and did that, and if you kind of massaged a couple names and changed the order of the draft and picked good players, I guarantee you that people would say there's no way that was worth the trade to get Julio Jones.
Well, didn't we talk about this a couple weeks ago on the show? There are five key positions, right? We talked about it with Prisco. Quarterback, left tackle, defensive end, cornerback. And Prisco added wide receiver, that game-breaking wide receiver. And I don't recall. I mean, did you agree with that, or do you disagree with that belongs in that spot?
A passing league.
Whether Watkins is the guy or not, having that guy that can explode down the field, he put in there as a fifth spot. And I don't remember asking whether you did or didn't.
I don't know if I would put it in there or not. I mean, if it is a fifth spot, it's a fifth spot. But it's still fifth. You know what I mean? I mean, still the top is quarterback. And then the ones that affect the passer, which is pass rusher and cornerback. And cornerback has to be right there at number three, because cornerbacks can alter scheme, much like what we saw the cornerback that was in New York for so many years that's now with New England.
Revis.
Darrell Revis.
Right.
what Darrelle Revis was able to do for Rex Ryan's scheme was tremendous, because what it was able to enabled him to do was to take Darrelle Revis, let him just cover one guy, and then put all the attention elsewhere, because you knew that Darrelle Revis was, and there was so much flexibility with a guy like that. To me, quarterback number one, pass rusher number two, cornerback number three, and then at number four, who would it be?
Left tackle.
Yeah. And then after that, take your pick. But, I mean, wide receiver, because it's a passing league.
But how many shutdown corners are there like that in the league? That's why wide receiver can come in important, a game breaker
right,
like that.
Right.
If you're overmatched on the outside offensively, then you have the advantage. Most weeks than not. There's not a Revis on every team.
I mean, Watkins could be going it too.
Could be.
Because of the defense they've got in St. Louis. They've got a quarterback that they want to give him every chance to find out whether he's going to be able to succeed. They've got a pretty good offensive line. Watkins could be going it too.
So the Rams have a pretty good offensive line?
Well, they spent some picks on it.
They need help there.
All right.
Yeah, they need help.
Well, they could take a left tackle, because they're going to move Saffold to guard. They could take Bruce Matthews.
Their guards and centers were not very good.
Robinson from Auburn's another name that's been thrown around at two.
Yeah. But he's more of a right tackle.
He is not worth a number two pick, I can tell you that. I hope the Rams take him at two.
More choices.
That'd be another good pick for the Jaguars.
All right. Let's take a break.
Great. When's your mock draft coming out?
Well, I should put one together.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. It would be the 7th of May.
All I know is that when I watched that guy, Robinson from Auburn, you watch him, they don't ever put him in a situation where he's got a pass block, and when they do one-on-one situations, he doesn't look very athletic. He's a big, powerful man, but not too overall.
All right, you're sitting in Baselli's chair. This is normally when he gets up and goes and finds food.
Okay, I'll be back. See you.
News is next.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
All right, go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. They're a proud partner of the Jaguars. Ford invites you to go further. Saxton Lagerman and what do you call him?
Shadwick.
You had a double.
Correct.
You got to draw out the sh a little bit. Shadwick.
I've been called much worse, boys. Okay. I'll tell you.
Not on these airwaves.
Breaking news, by the way. The Texans have agreed to terms with quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick just moments ago.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's a good pickup for them.
And so that could spell the end for Schaub down there, too.
As everybody expected. I mean, when he's been beat up like that, and with the fan base are ready to move on. I mean, I think it's kind of a similar situation like what Blaine Gabbert was facing here. Sometimes it's just better for both parties to move on, and it will be better for Matt Schaub.
Right, he'll land on his feet. I mean, Oakland needs a quarterback.
Cleveland needs a quarterback. He'll be fine. He just needs a change of scenery. You know, there's not many Virginia quarterbacks that have gone on to play in the National Football League, so I got to root for the guy.
Did Sean Moore not get a long career?
No, very short career.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Very short career.
I don't know if I can name a Virginia quarterback.
Don Majkowski.
Yeah.
I still can't name
Scott Seacules. Very short time in Dallas.
He knows his guys.
There hasn't been a lot.
He even knows Virginia basketball today.
I couldn't tell you anything about Virginia basketball.
But you know they won the ACC.
I do.
And that they're regular number
season
one seed
and
for the
tournament,
first time
number
since
one seed, I do
76,
know that.
Yeah, something so like that.
And a lot of people had to kind of let me know that things were going on with that program. And
but now you're following it again.
No, when do they play? You probably know better than I.
No, I don't.
I don't know.
Don't look at me. I don't know.
Yeah. He has been at Pro Day all week long. Where are you going next?
We're going to owners' meetings Monday and Tuesday, so we'll be live there in Orlando again. And then Wednesday, flying out to College Station. And Thursday is Johnny Manziel's day.
You know,
but it's not just Johnny Manziel.
Mike Evans,
wide receiver, and a few
Mike
other receivers.
Mike Evans should be drafted higher than Johnny Manziel.
Really? Well,
I was just about to ask you if you were buying into any of the Manziel hype. He's still on most of the mocks, and we know what they're worth. He's still on most of the mocks in the top 10. But it does
top
give 10, you some,
top three yeah. most places.
Well, I've seen some places where he's been seven, you know, and as far as down as eight with Minnesota.
Yeah, sure.
But there's a lot of people that do have him in the top five still.
Well, yeah.
Are you buying that at all?
No, I'm not buying that.
Why?
I'm not buying that. I just, you know, and then in the National Football League, quarterbacks, I mean, may start early in their career by running around a lot, but sooner or later they have to end up in the pocket. And with Johnny, he plays the game. And I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I think this is the best way to describe it. If you were picking a football team to play in the National Football League, I don't think Johnny Manziel would be in the top round, and maybe late second round, maybe all the way to the third round. But if you were drafting a team to play pickup football, in the back of the schoolyard, Johnny Manziel may be first overall, hands down,
every
bar
time.
None, every time.
You know, there are billboards around Houston imploring the Texans to take Johnny Manziel. He's a cult hero in the state of Texas. We've seen that here locally, obviously. So is he Tim Tebow? Is he a guy who's got a skill set that he can get something out of it in the NFL, can't be a long-term starter?
I think he has a better skill set than Tim Tebow because he actually has a pretty good arm.
Right.
He's got a quick release. Where Johnny kind of falls short a little bit in the evaluation process, to me, is that he goes off the script so many different times instead of sticking with the play, and he just bails out. And then it becomes basically sandlot football. And he's very good at it now. I mean, he's very good at it. But the design of the play a lot of times doesn't follow through, and not because there was a guy that beat an offensive lineman and was in his face right away, but because he had the impression that something did, or because Johnny's decision-making wasn't very good and he wasn't understanding where the ball needed to go. I still like him athletically because the guy is an absolute physical talent. He's fun to watch. He's an ultimate competitor. But a quarterback in the NFL has to function within a system. There's a reason why Peyton Manning's been playing for so long. There's a reason why John Elway played for a long period of time, because John Elway made that transition to where he could stay in the pocket and throw the football to who he needed to get the ball. RG3s, Michael Vicks, they just don't have the success long term. And if you're looking for sustainable winning, which is what Gus Bradley and David Caldwell have talked about at length, sustained winning, you have to have a quarterback that's going to stay in the pocket and throw it.
All right.
That's not Johnny.
No, you wouldn't think so. Let's move on to free agency, because the story this week is that Maurice Jones-Drew is finally out there knocking on doors and having his tires kicked. He left Pittsburgh.
Which, by the way, didn't mean to interrupt you. No. I mean, it's a weekend of free agency. Is that a little surprising, too? That,
I mean, do you know what? Since you say that, before we talk about Maurice.
Nine days in a free agency.
Yeah, 9 days.
Do you remember last week we had the caller who said Ben Tate signed with Cleveland. It's a 5-year deal worth $30 million. And, of course, it hadn't happened. Did you see what his numbers were?
Did not.
2 years, $7 million. $3.5 million per year for Ben Tate,
Toby Gerhart and the other running back that signed right around $3.3 million a year. So, I mean, that's kind of the range for running backs.
Which is, it would seem,
not a lot of money.
No. Well, no. I mean, Ben Tate was a guy that everybody was pointing to. He was going to get paid.
Well, I think
$3.5 million a year.
What this does is kind of lets Maurice know that he misgauged the market for his services a couple years ago when he opted to hold out when he shouldn't have. And I made the statement then. I think he's making a mistake. I think he's overvaluing what he's worth. The position is not the same. I mean, and I'm sure that this has been a very difficult time for Maurice Jones-Drew, because Maurice is the type of guy that bothers him.
So would you resign him?
Me?
Right here?
No.
Well, I mean, I think most people would say that. But he's a guy that plays with a chip on his shoulder. He's one of your most important players. And if you could fit him into a role, if he would accept that.
Yeah, well,
he's got to accept the third down role.
But I think David Caldwell made an absolute brilliant decision when it came to Maurice Jones-Drew. When he came out flat out and said, and David's always been, he doesn't have any kind of side program or agenda.
No, he's very transparent.
He's right up front. He was up front about the Tim Tebow situation when he took the job. And then with Maurice, he's been up front about Maurice's situation when he came out and he said that we're going to let Maurice test the market. Well, the reason he said that is because he felt, my guess, is that Maurice's value of himself was certainly way higher than what they thought his value was. And the only way to maybe get him back would be to allow him to see what the market truly bears and then bring him back when he kind of realizes, hey, look, that's the market. I tested it. Now I just want to come and play football, and I'll be happy. That makes it a possibility for him to come back. Now,
would
have they moved
him?
On? Yeah.
Would you want him? Knowing what you know about him, you've known him since he came into the league. You know how he is.
Hey, look, I mean, for the fair price, which, is probably for Maurice, is going to be around that $2 million a year range, yeah, I'd take him back because I think he's one of the ultimate competitors that have ever put on a Jaguars uniform. And I'm not saying that because of what he did in the past should allow him to walk into the door in the present. What I'm saying is that if Maurice has a complete offseason of rehabilitation, can he regain some of his form? If he does, he would be an asset.
Any other thoughts?
No.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. But does Toby Gerhardt's contract make it mutually exclusive that you can't have Maurice Jones-Drew? I don't think
so.
No,
I don't think so at all. No. Gerhardt's just going to be a starting running back. He needs some other legs back there.
Sure.
Too. I mean, Denard Robinson has put on a little weight. Still going to have some hands somewhere. That's a project. I'm losing my mind on the other running back right
Todman,
now.
Jordan Todman.
Just unproven, you know. So, hey, there's room. There's room for bodies.
Plenty of room.
No doubt.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how many more visits he takes.
Well, from everything that's being reported, the only two suitors that have an interest in Maurice so far have been Pittsburgh and the Jets.
And so the Jets visit never materialized.
It has not yet. That might have been something that...
agents tend to float things.
Sure. I'd float a whole bunch, too, if I was an agent. That's part of my job.
Drum up the business. All right, folks, you can win a trip for two to the draft in New York City when you enter the EverBank Draft Day Sweepstakes. You'll receive round-trip air, hotel accommodations, and tickets to the draft, which this year is on May the 8th. To enter it for official rules, go to everbank.com/draft. We'll return with one more segment. Jaguars Thursday rolls along from the HennityAutos.com studio after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
A little less than 10 minutes left, or so, on Jaguars Thursday from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, our special guests from Jaguars.com, J.P. Shadrick.
Special enough to have the mic off. That's special.
Well, I mean, hey, if you look on the game day kit, Buscelli does not even have his name on Joe's console. It just says guest.
Hey, all right. Well, so it's good to be special.
I can throw special at you.
I appreciate that. All right. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well,
guys.
we're thrilled to
and
have
Joe.
You.
And Joe.
Hey, the owners meetings you mentioned you're going to. The competition committee has been meeting in advance of that. So let me throw a couple of these ideas at you and see what you think. I mean, these are notable proposed rule changes. Number one, move the line of scrimmage on extra points to the 25-yard line.
Don't like it.
Why?
It would kind of change the history and the future history of the game.
So did you like the Goodell suggestion where you get 7 points for a touchdown, you can go for an extra point, right, a two-point conversion,
mm-hmm.
But if you miss, you only get 6?
No, I don't like that.
From a strategic standpoint, that didn't interest you at all?
I mean, I think you still have to keep the positions that have made the game what it is. I mean, you keep kickers. Look, if you want to move it back for an extra point to, say, the 15-yard line, which essentially becomes a 32-yard field goal, and then still keep it on the, 2.5-yard line to make it a 2-point conversion try, or if you want to change the way that the uprights are configured by making them more narrow, fine. But still keep all the aspects of the game the same as what it was when this great game started.
Well, I don't expect that anything's going to happen with that particular rule when you're in Orlando next week.
No, that's such a big change that would take a little while to get enough votes, I think.
All right.
I mean, to me, you can't minimize all of these positions. And, you know, a lot of these rules are kind of guided towards minimizing special teams. The extra point you're talking about moving the kickoff yard line all the way up to the 40-yard line. Well, then why even have a kickoff? I mean, I think every kicker in the league can kick it out of the back of the end zone if it gets moved up to the 40. And I understand what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to say that that's the most dangerous play in football is kickoffs and such. Well, there's other ways I think that they can make it safer by just essentially eliminating the play by making it easy to have a touchback.
Here's a question. If it's back to the 30-whatever-yard line it's on, do you have to kick or can you fake and go for 2? In theory.
Well,
if they move the extra point back.
Okay.
You line up for an extra point to wherever it is.
10, 15-yard line or whatever.
30 or whatever. If you decide to, hey, you know, we're going to get these guys. Let's fake it. Let's go for 2. from the 30. Is that possible?
That's a good, that's a good question.
Yeah. I don't know.
It has to be discussed, but I mean, if you were going to go for two.
I mean, I would probably be fired the next day.
Yeah,
I tried that.
Why wouldn't you stay on the 2.5-yard line? But yeah.
I mean, if you brought each upright in and closed the width 2 feet.
No, I get you.
What would that do to the game? I mean, what would it do to the accuracy of field goals and also extra points? I don't know.
Joe, you got 10 seconds.
I don't think you can. Thank you for that. I don't think you could make the goalpost any narrower, because what if you're going to kick a 40 or longer field goal? I don't think that's fair. But you've seen them, the practice field goals that have the four posts where a kicker can say, I want to go for that section or that section. Mm-hmm. Okay, you've got the wider part for your field goal, but the extra point, you got to put it between the two narrower ones.
I'd be good with that.
Is it Aussie Rules Football that has the different posts where if it's 1 point outside, 2 points, something like that?
It is. Yeah. And then the official comes out and goes like,
yeah, that's right, points out. Like he's firing
10 seconds done?
Yeah. How about a couple more of these before we sign off tonight? May recovery of loose ball in field of play reviewable?
I think all plays should be reviewable, and I think all plays should be able to be challenged by a coach if he chooses to do so.
Okay.
I don't see why certain plays should be reviewable. I think if you just make the coach have the ability to challenge things instead of having things automatically get replayed in the booth, just give the coaches some more challenges and make everything reviewable.
How about this
one? Or challengeable.
And we'll deal with the roster stuff in a moment. Allow teams with retractable roof stadiums to open or close the roof at halftime.
Yeah, I dig that. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, the rule that they have in the National Football League now that you have to determine whether the roof is going to be open or closed
3 hours
or 2 hours before kickoff is totally asinine.
Because, well, I mean, if it starts raining during a game, you can't close the roof? Is that the rule now? I don't even know.
Yeah. You can't. Once you open it or close it, it's open or closed for the whole game.
Well, what's the point of a retractable roof? Close the roof. It's raining.
To say that you got a retractable roof.
Yeah, I guess. You know,
that's an elite club.
You got to rely on the weatherman. All right. These two are interesting. The first is allow any player who's on injured reserve to return to the roster after 6 weeks.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, to me, having injured reserve and not having more rules like baseball, which you go on a DL, and JP, you probably can speak to that better than I.
Different day DLs, 15-day, all that stuff.
To me, that's
make it simple.
That's the way to go. I mean, why lose? And I think what that does is a lot of times when a player gets hurt, certain players are pushed to get back by a certain time frame because, you know, hey, look, you know, we need you, man. You know, we lost this guy, we lost that guy. I think if you make it more flexibility by taking guys on and off of the injury reserve, I think it takes pressure off of the players to rush back from injury, in my opinion.
Okay. And then allow 49 active players instead of 46 for regular season games played on Thursday. In other words, you get the team that has that short week.
You can't do that.
Get the extra three players.
You really can't do that because some teams won't be able to field 49. Some teams have a hard time fielding, what is it now, 46 plus one.
Right.
You know, so to me, or 45 plus one, to me that doesn't make any sense by doing that.
But I guess what they're trying to do is say on a short week, if you've got a couple of extra bodies, you can keep them active to take the pressure. Because remember, we heard late last year, a lot of players were complaining about the Thursday games.
Like every week, every team. The players are
going to complain about Thursday games.
So give a couple more players, allow more flexibility.
Yeah,
for those Thursday night games.
It's not really, to me, I don't think that's a big – I mean, to me is that you need to have it fair. And pretty much every team every week can find a way to get to the –
45-1.
To the 45-1. Some teams would have a hard time getting to 49. There was instances where this team here last year wouldn't have been able to field 49 in certain weeks. I mean, you knew exactly who the inactives were going to be Wednesday and Thursday.
Right.
I don't like that rule. Just keep it what it is.
All right.
But the one thing that I think that would be nice is the ability, if you have the flexibility with injury reserve, maybe it's more possible to get to that 49 on game day. If you have flexibility by bringing players on and off of practice squad freely without making it a mandatory, hey, once he gets elevated, he's got to stay for a certain amount of time. When you get another practice squad guy from another team, you know, he's got to be guaranteed a certain amount on the active roster.
Right.
I think if some of those rules change, you could make it easier for teams to make it 49 on game day.
All right. Well, thanks for so ably sitting in on the seat. Next week, you're going to be where?
We'll be in Orlando Monday and Tuesday for owners' meetings, and then Wednesday flying to A&M for the Thursday pro day for Manziel.
How's the private jet? Are you enjoying
it? Whoa, 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 whoa.
For Manziel and
Evans and a few other receivers.
And they got an offensive tackle that's pretty good, by the way.
All right, sir. Guys, thanks. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun, folks. Have a great night, everybody.